Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday. It is the 3rd of October, the first Monday in October, which of course means is the Supreme Court and also a Walter Matthau, Jill Clayburgh movie. Remember?
Say that again?
First Monday in October.
Oh, yeah. Jill Clayburgh.
And Walter Matthau.
Right. That was a good
flip. Yeah, it was a good movie. Anyway, which was about, of course, the opening of the Supreme Court, but that's another story. Good morning, everybody. Welcome. It is wonderful to have you here. Hopefully you had a gorgeous weekend. It was a great fall, autumnal weekend with wonderful shadows and sun and clouds and the colors are turning. It was absolutely gorgeous. I hope you got to enjoy it in some way, shape, or form. Crisp air, all good. So, recharged, ready for another week, and we welcome you. We have a lot to talk about. Let me get to our guests. Also, a reminder that you can be a part of our program by simply writing to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, good morning. How are you, sir? All right.
Now?
There you go. Yeah. Hi. There's Alan. How are you?
Yeah. So anyway, yes, good morning. I got out. I had a wonderful walk. First it was dark, then it was light. And everything is good.
That's how that goes. First it was dark, and then it was white.
And then it gets dark again, Alan, so be careful.
You are so right.
Like my laundry, it was wet.
Yeah, now it's dry.
It was dry.
I was hungry, now I'm sated. Yeah, it's all
exactly.
That.
Exactly. Very, very good. We could go on for hours and... Well, why don't we?
Yes.
Good morning, Alan. It's good to have you here. Thank you.
Good to be here.
Jennifer Burns joins us, UAlbany lecturer in Africana Studies. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, everyone. Happy to be here.
Wonderful to have you here, as always. Thank you. The Tetherless World, Tetherless? Tetherless World Chair of Computer, Web, and Cognitive Sciences and founding director of RPI's Institute for Data, Artificial Intelligence, and Computing, Jim Hendler, in the house. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
And political consultant and lobbyist and dear friend, Libby Post. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I'm here. You know, you guys get to enjoy.
And I'll go home.
Right. Well, no. But you guys get to enjoy the leaves and all of that. I just get to enjoy campaigns. That's it.
Well, I made this point a moment ago on a different subject, but I said, you know, the difference is that you get paid for it.
Yes, I do. It's true.
Yeah. So, you know, that makes it a little bit better.
It does. I'm not complaining. It's just a lot. You know, now we're in the last month, and it's just...
Yeah, now the gloves are off.
Well, you betcha.
So, Libs, do you know when you're going to win? In other words, how can you foresee, you know, your chances? Are you almost always accurate, or do you mess up?
I love this question for two reasons. One, it's a great question, and two, just watching Libby sort of
face.
Squirm is great.
Oh, I'm so glad we're on the radio. Yes and no. There are times when, based on voter enrollment and all the rest of that, you know you're going to win. I mean, but I don't get really hired for those all that often, because why campaign? Although, you know, I'm doing work for candidates that we know are going to be fine. And then there are the other ones where we have a really, really, really good shot. And people are underestimating candidates and thinking they got this in the bag and the whole nine yards. And, you know, we'll see what happens on November 9th. But it's always, you know, a crapshoot.
Do you have to counsel them? In other words, do you have to say, don't be arrogant, you know?
Oh,
don't
of course.
Be, yeah.
Of course I do. I mean, I'm like, you know, when I'm running lawyers and, you know, it's like, or working for candidates who have lawyers, you know, as up there in the realm of leadership.
So let me get this right. Lawyers are people
who have
alliances with lawyers.
I have to tell them, you can't speak like a lawyer all the time. You have to talk like regular person. Because if you speak like a lawyer, you're speaking at 30,000 feet. You need to speak on the ground. So there's that. And there is some arrogance that comes across at times. Although, you know, I work for Democrats, so we're not arrogant. We are of the people.
No.
And we, you know, at least on my level, Alan, I work local. So it's a little different.
Well, that's telling. Yeah. Well, all right. Did that answer your question, Alan?
If I had a crystal ball, it would be a different ball game, but I don't.
Yeah. Oh, so let me just amend the question real quickly, which is, so do you let them know if you think that they're going to lose?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a great thing to do. I mean, so speaking of lawyers, how many lawyers do you know who have regularly told people, you think defensively, that, you know, your chances really aren't that good?
Well, I'm honest with people about what the voter profile is, what the politics in the district is, what they need to do to align themselves with the district, and that whether or not it's going to be a more difficult race than the shoo-ins. You know, it's, you know, like in Albany, in the city of Albany, you win the primary, you're done. You know, and so it's always the primary, and it's always, you know, there are some people who are going to run in a primary and you know they're going to win, and then there are some where it's an open seat, like last year's Common Council race in the 14th Ward. And, you know, we did a really good job of beating the party pick. And, you know, I kind of knew going in that that was going to be the case because of the politics that was on our side, but you don't know until the votes are cast.
All right, that was fun. Let's.
Okay, great, thanks so much.
You're ready to start with.
With what? What are we talking about today?
We have lots of stuff to talk about. Don't you worry. A reminder: if you would like to be a part of the program, all you have to do is write to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we welcome your thoughts on the myriad issues that we will discuss this morning. So let's go to what is happening there's two stories I can go to, and the one that I think is interesting. They're both interesting. But as far as this, New York Times did an investigative piece. And we've sort of been wondering about this Ron DeSantis sending the migrants to Martha's Vineyard. Mm-hmm. So what we knew originally was that he rounded up migrants, put them on a plane, and sent them to Martha's Vineyard unannounced. So nobody knew that they were coming. Nobody was prepared. And I think by all accounts, and I don't even know that he would necessarily disagree with this, but it was a stunt, right? So then, among other things. So then the question came, yeah, okay, but where did these people come from? And then we find out that they come from, well, not Florida, but from Texas, from Arlington, Texas. Mm-hmm. Well, that doesn't, you know, so you went to another state to bring people in so you can send them somewhere else.
And that governor didn't even know it was happening.
And that governor, Governor Abbott, doesn't know about that. And then finally, and we've talked about all of this for the last several days. But now the New York Times is reporting that not only were these migrants tricked, and nobody knew where they were going or how they were going. The question is, who paid for it? And the answer seems to be, well, the state of Florida paid for it. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but it may be against state law for what they did of using this money for this particular purpose. The flights last month carrying 48 migrants attracted international attention and grew condemnation from Democrats, as well as several legal challenges. Mr. DeSantis immediately claimed credit for what appeared to be a political maneuver, dumping dozens of asylum seekers on the doorstep of Northeastern Democrats who have resisted calls to clamp down on immigration. Again, I would just like to point out that these are places where they have said, we welcome immigrants, and then they brought immigrants to them, and oddly, they were welcomed. Yeah,
that's
sort of interesting how that all worked. Florida officials have provided little information about the program or how it was engineered, but details have begun to emerge of the clandestine mission that was carried out without the knowledge of the Texas governor, a fellow Republican. Flights paid for with state money, in possible violation of the state law that allocated the money. A charter airline company with political ties to the Florida governor. So why should you farm this out if you know a guy, right? So the question is, I guess, Alan, I mean, there's a lot of questions here of just, you know, the sort of the hideousness of this. And yet, the question is, does this hurt, ultimately, does this hurt Ron DeSantis?
Well, it will hurt him with some people, right, Joe? I mean, in other words, there will be people who think this wasn't done according to Hoyle, that there really wasn't the kind of money that there should have been to back it all up. So one thinks that there could be trouble for DeSantis here. On the other hand, you know, I've always been surprised by how receptive the people of that state are, Florida, are to DeSantis. He seems to do it rather well, not with me, but with an awful lot of people.
Libby Host.
You know, what I found, I have to say, what I found interesting about this is that on a local level, I went head-to-head with Mark Grimm, who's a local Republican county legislator from Gilderland, on Channel 13, and he kept saying, well, even Martha's Vineyard got rid of them, and that's just not true. Martha's Vineyard took care of them as much well as they could. Given...
You mean they got rid of them by sending them to Cape Cod to
right.
the
Hyannis? Yeah, yeah, they didn't even want them. You know, it was like, how racist can you get?
No, they had a base there, right. which yeah. was right. set up for right. migrants.
But no matter what anybody does to try to be helpful in these situations, the other side's going to turn it around as you hate them too. And that was the kind of message he was trying to say, is that, well, all those rich folks in Martha's Vineyard, they didn't want them there. And clearly that was not the case. They helped. They gave food. They gave, you know, everything that they could. The churches opened up. And then, you know, they went to the empty army barracks. So they had a roof over their head and heat and air conditioning and all the rest of that and food. So it's just... You know, the demonization of migrants and immigrants in this country, we all have to remember where we came from. You know, I'm second generation. I think probably you are too, Jim.
Yep.
You know, and it's just, give it up already. You know, we have Lady Liberty in the harbor for a reason.
Jim Hendler.
So, yeah, you know, so I could see originally that the places that would get upset by this are the places that DeSantis isn't trying to win, like New York, like Massachusetts. But what I would be really annoyed at the moment, if I was a Florida resident who just learned that he spent $1.5 million to send these people up there at a time where where he's begging the federal government for a huge amount of money for hurricane relief, that they put $12 million right. into busing. Mm-hmm. Immigrants instead of fixing my house. I mean,
unnecessarily.
I would hope the Florida.
Well, I hope Charlie
Crist
uses this in the campaign.
I hope so too. Yeah, I mean,
and now DeSantis is going to have to stand with the president and thank him. It's going to kill him.
It may kill him, but you better believe he wants to be president himself.
I know.
But, you know, Chris Christie's embracing Obama over Sandy was considered right. to be one of the reasons he lost
right.
the primaries. So I think we're going to see DeSantis take a very polite but distant thanking of Biden.
Yeah.
Right.
Jennifer.
What I'm interested in, I think, when I read this story, what stuck out to me was the level of deception. I'd like to know who hired this woman that people are reporting enticed them with misinformation to move to a different place. So she must have, or perhaps started in Florida, then went to Texas, recruiting, we'll say, and then helped to entice or move the people back to Florida and then out of Florida to Massachusetts. So I'd like to know who hired her, who's paying her? Are there others like her? Is this a larger plan of deceptive agents sent to other places to deliver, you know, untruthful, basically lies, to move people interstate multiple times? Because it's not just we left Florida to go to Massachusetts. It's the moving of them across two different state lines, right? Interstate from Texas to Florida and then from Florida to Massachusetts. And so I'm interested in that. Then you look at the allocation. So who's paying her? Who's paying for we know where the money came from to some extent for the airplanes and other things like that. We know that came from tax dollars.
Right. And went into a donor's pocket.
Right. So those are the pieces that I'm really interested in because it seems like a lot of state level corruption.
Yeah, think.
corruption in Florida? Really?
But down to like just the fact that the state or this division is hiring individual people.
Yep.
And it seems, based on what was reported, that this woman was in the military before.
Yeah.
Right? So that makes me think more about the Republicans and this kind of hit all the time on veterans and recruiting them into a lot of different... shady, undemocratic things.
Yeah. And
you're so polite.
Thank you. I work at it.
She's on the radio. You know how it is. You should hear her afterwards.
Exactly.
All right. Well, we have much more on this we would like to discuss, so we will do that. We're going to take a quick break, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org, and we will get to those. We have Alan Chartok, Jim Hendler, Jennifer Burns, and Libby Post with us. Again, we welcome your thoughts on the subject at hand. We have many others, but this is the one we're talking about at the moment. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. It is the 3rd of October, and it's a Monday. But not only is it the 3rd of October and the first Monday in October, but it is also a very special day here at WAMC. And that is because today marks the day that we open the lockbox. The lockbox that had been, you know, yeah, I say closed, but you could always, you know, slip some cash in there. But now it's like officially open. So the fund drive, and correct me if I have any of this wrong, Alan, but the fund drive, the you and me talking incessantly about the money starts October 17th. But whatever we do now, we don't have to do then, and people can go into the lockbox and add whatever they can to it.
That's exactly right. And the one thing that I know about our audience is that truly they are the smartest people in the world. And they know we can't do it without them, without each individual doing what she or he or I or you could do. I mean, after all, this is not going to be easy. We all know it. And it's going to take everybody doing something. And I think that when our kids look up at us and say, or grandchildren look up at us and say, Mommy, Daddy, Grandpa, Grandma, how do they pay for this? We'll be able to say, well, we do. We all do pay something. And so now it's a time that everybody gets going and says, WAMC.org. Yeah, that's easy. WAMC.org on the computer. Or just stick it in an envelope and send it to 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. That's the way to do it.
Absolutely. So we are now, it's officially open. We're 2 weeks away, and whatever we can get now, we don't have to get later. And that is, I think, significant for many reasons. We have obviously coverage of the elections. We have coverage of there may be another January 6th hearing. We want to bring all that to you. We want to be on the roundtable. We want to have our panelists and do all of that. So we can if we really end before we start.
You know, I know it sounds trite, but we are all in this together. And anybody who doesn't get that just is not catching the bus in the right place. We made a radio station together. We got to keep it. You like that reference, catching the bus in the right place?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, you're not going to catch the number 12 bus on the number 20 route, right?
Absolutely true, whatever it means.
I don't know. Regardless, here are the things. We need your money, and we need your help and your love and your support, which you have always provided. And we have few doubts that it will not happen this time.
And how do you do it? Well, you can do it in a number of ways. The best way is to just go to your computer and go to WAMC.org, and there will be, and you just put your money in. Another way, and I hesitate to say it because I don't think we have a lot of people at the radio station today to pick up your phone calls, but there'll be some, is to dial 1-800-323-9262. That's the most famous name in radio, 1-800-323-9262, and say, put my name down, brother. Where do I sign?
Well, we're lucky today.
Sister, where do I sign?
We were lucky. We have three students who are shadowing today. So
put them to work.
Yeah, we can just put them on phones.
They're all nodding.
they'd be up for that. I believe they're SUNY Albany students. They're David Gissey and his students, SUNY Albany students.
Yes.
And if they look familiar, yes.
Yeah.
There's that. But WAMC.org is the easiest way to do it. Just write on your smartphone or computer or however, WAMC.org. Also, 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, and yes, 1-800-323-9262. We don't have operators, and we will when we start going.
But this is not Lewis Aluminum.
No.
Operators are not standing by from Lewis Aluminum.
No. But your internet is standing by for you.
That is right.
That's correct.
That is right.
And there's Texas.
Always a good time. That's right. That's always a good time. When is a good time? Whenever you can do it.
But it's so serious. I mean, I don't have to tell everybody out there that this cannot happen by itself. And if you love the radio station, and we know you do, because we hear from you all the time, just pick up a phone, 1-800-323-9262, or WAMC.org, the best way to do it, and we'll be saved. Saved, I tell you. S-A-V-E-D, I am.
1-800-323-9262 if you absolutely have to. Otherwise, WAMC.org, WAMC.org. All right. We'll be reminding you along the way, but this is of the utmost importance, and so know that you can help us out right now, and we need it. And whatever we do now, we don't have to do later. Okay, let's get back to the subjects at hand here and talk about what's happening. We've been talking about the DeSantis migrant flights to Martha's Vineyard and what we know about those. Claudia says, has the roundtable discussed the October 1st article in the Newburgh News about migrants, mostly teenage girls from Honduras and Guatemala, supposedly being flown into Orange County by Homeland Security, according to Assemblymember Colin Schmidt, who I believe is going to be on our Congressional Corner segment today. I do not know about this. Does anyone else know about this? Okay, we'll do our homework. How's that? One thing I've not heard said here is that the money used to fly the asylum seekers used funds for moving unauthorized migrants out of Florida, and the people moved from Texas were in process and thus not unauthorized per se. Thus, two reasons. This was an improper use of taxpayer funds and thus an illegal use of funds. Yes, that other point, which is a good one and one that perhaps we did not articulate in our wrap-up a moment ago, that, yes, this wasn't, we use this term unauthorized, but these were people in Texas that were in process, and thus they were
unauthorized. They were in process by the federal government.
Correct.
Correct? And then a state walks in and oversteps its bounds.
Well, more than that, they had permission at that point to go to any state they want to go to. So in other words, they're allowed to. So if they wanted to go to Florida, they could go to Florida. In fact, having moved to Martha's Vineyard, if they want to go back to Florida, they can legally. So, you know, he's getting rid of people who, if they want to come back, can come back. It seems like strangely, it seems like a political stunt.
You think?
Mike writes, when disaster funds are provided to Florida, a public discussion point should be considered regarding whether to deduct $1.5 million to compensate for misappropriated funds associated with the migrant flight. Make DeSantis squirm, says Mike. Then we go to Sean. We should send a thank you to the governors of Texas and Florida. They are helping the northern states to get back the seats in Congress. Alan, do you think that's true?
Hard to say. You know, by the time the smoke clears and we see what happens, we'll have a better idea. But right now, it's possible.
Well, you know, one of the stories that's being discussed a lot is overtime pay for farm workers. And I found it very interesting in reading a lot of the stories that most of the people who pick the apples and do a lot of the other stuff we do up here in the Northeast are, in fact, migrants. Mm-hmm. They're mostly legal and, I mean, all legal. And, you know, when these people are being sent to places where people want them to do jobs and are willing to pay them, it just seems to me that's what they came here for. So that's the other thing, is that a lot of the places where, you know, the sanctuary cities and places where migrants are welcome need people to do things. We constantly are reading about how hard it is to get people to do a lot of jobs, and we have a lot of these people who want to do the jobs.
I don't know about anywhere else, but just walk down the streets of Great Barrington and see all the help wanted signs.
Roger writes, it would be more convincing if the panel would evidence some concern for the flagrant flouting of immigration laws by the Biden administration, in addition to its condemnation of the Florida governor, or perhaps the panel welcomes open borders. That from Roger.
Well, actually,
do you want to unpack that, Jim?
No, I just want to say at least one member of the panel would actually welcome relatively open borders, because I don't see why we don't have much more open borders. But that said, the whole thing about open borders, closed borders, right? You know, the first politician to truly get heavily involved in trying to create a path to legal migration was a gentleman named Ronald Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
I did not generally agree with Ronald Reagan on all of his policies, but I thought that one, which the Republicans were leading, seemed like a good one. And then all of a sudden, as the conservatism of the Republican Party rose, as you started to see pushback against the Clintons and then especially against the Obamas, the whole thing became this huge political issue that really shouldn't be, because really what we should be doing is looking at the laws for migrants and figuring out what makes sense.
Well, as I have said so many times, should.
Yeah,
but
well.
But the fact of the matter is, there is a sense that people become citizens, they're going to vote, and from other places, they're going to vote Democratic. And it seems to me that's what it's all about.
Well, that's a big part of what it's all about. Of course, Florida, the Latino vote did not go nearly as
100%,
Democratic as expected. And, and so, you know, migrants are real people, too, and they have a lot of different issues and a lot of things they care about. So
there is, for example, a big difference between being from a Central American country and being from Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that.
Let's see. We go to one more letter and then we'll take a break. Jim writes to us and says, the panel fails to recognize that the DeSantis move, political as it was, rightfully shocked the liberal rich in Martha's Vineyard, the same way dozens of unprepared folks got planes and busloads of illegals in the middle of the night from the Biden administration from months ago. Don't you think? Perfect squelch. A goose gander message.
What?
Okay, we'll do our...
I'm with Libby.
Yeah.
All right. I will say there is one aspect of this that I think is important. I think Ron DeSantis was trying to figure out how to get more publicity than Abbott, because that's his biggest competitor if Trump is not running in 2024.
And doing this shows how out of touch, in a sense, Abbott is, because A, Abbott didn't know, but B, he didn't think of it. Now, did he?
Right.
No, but then he followed it up with the Kamala Harris stunt of sending them to her.
Yeah, but
to
see,
her
but,
house.
But then it looked like he was just
copying. You know, yeah. Copying. Yeah. All right. all very adult, isn't it? All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll return to the subject. We have more letters, and we will move on to other topics as well. Panel at WAMC.org. Don't forget the lockbox. That's WAMC.org, WAMC.org. We will be right back. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us. We're running low on music, but I had to turn. It was very chilly in here.
Yes, it's like, you know, as I'm fond of saying, you could hang meat in here.
And anyway. We're doing fine.
Yes, it's warming up.
Everyone is fine. All right, we have a lot of letters here, so let's get to them. Gordon writes, the subtext of DeSantis's horrible stunt was an appeal for equity. If we have to take people, you should too. That issue is about to pose a question of equity to DeSantis and all the wealthy residents of places like Sanibel and Pine Island, whose flood insurance is backed by the U.S. taxpayers. People in upland areas like the Capital Region, Ohio, Kansas, and Denver. Why should we continue to subsidize the houses of the ultra-wealthy on Barrier Islands, which are called Barrier Islands because they are there to protect the mainland? Oh, Gordon. That's a good question.
In case anyone wonders, Mar-a-Lago was spared.
I know. There's a great meme that says, "Dear Ian, you only had to do one thing," and the picture of Mar-a-Lago.
Well, all right. We don't.
Sorry, but we don't. You know.
We don't wish natural disasters on anyone.
No. Well, you might not.
And South Carolina. That's I want funny. To express my deep sympathy for the people there who got an unexpected hit.
Yeah.
It's really interesting, you know, what was going on. Of course, some of this was discussed on the show last week, so I won't go into it again, but how the rising ocean temperatures are what caused Ian to just suddenly go from very low to super hurricane.
The recharge.
No, yes. Libby's raising her hand, so I assume she wants to be called on. Yes.
I just remember when Katrina happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The right all said, it's because Southern Comfort, there was a gay conference going on in New Orleans. It's because of that. It's because of the gays that this happened to New
Orleans.
Well,
there's always some fool
right,
who says
right.
something
and,
like that.
And nobody's saying that now. Nobody's saying anything about that now. And South Beach did sort of get damaged. So, which is where the gays are, along with Fort Lauderdale.
Well, I think, yeah, probably not just where they
are. No, I was going to say
probably
that.
A little bit more.
You know what I mean? It's where we go. And, you know, and nobody's saying, well, it's because of the gays that this happened to Florida. You know, you've got a Republican governor. So I guess, you know, weather is an all political thing. It doesn't matter.
Are you sure there isn't some fool who is saying that?
Oh, I'm sure there is. And boy, is he foolish.
Now let me ask Jim, since we have you here and knowing your tech prowess, let me ask you, and I will admit I had not planned on asking you this, but one of the things that I was fascinated by as the storm was moving across and into the Gulf and hitting and then moving away to the state, and you'll remember, and I mean this is always the case with storms, and I'm not saying this is a criticism, but I think originally they were thinking that it would hit more Tampa wide, and it came down further south, and these spaghetti models and so forth. Tech speaking, how far have we come on that, and does that in the future sort of give us a sense of where, because you mentioned the temperatures rising in the oceans, that we can figure out that formula as to where these storms are going. I mean, look, we do what we can. We have evacuation orders. There were evacuation orders pretty much throughout the state of Florida. So if it hit anywhere, you mentioned the people of South Carolina as it went out off into the coast, regained momentum, and then went into South Carolina. But how much do we know, and do we see that changing?
So the prediction of the motion of these kind of storms is staggeringly complicated. In fact, there's a U.S. model, there's a European model, there's an Asian model, which is used for typhoons. And they're all very, they're all similar. They're all running on some of the largest supercomputers in the world. And, you know, they're what generate those spaghetti models. And each time those models are getting a little more precise. So sometimes we're actually tracking them well. The problem is, first of all, you've got these, the model is based on what we know. Okay, so the temperature of the water off Florida as Ian was coming in was 4 degrees higher than any of the models had predicted. Right? Global warming, strange temperatures this summer, that kind of thing. So the models aren't like this minute. They take a long time to run. They figure out if things happen. And then there are these specific models running all the time. In fact, the former chief scientist of the U.S. under Trump was actually a hurricane scientist who was a firm believer that climate change was involved in this. He just couldn't say it publicly.
Right.
And his group does these models, and they're getting more accurate, but the conditions are changing just as fast as the modeling is. So it makes it really hard. So Ian's, you know, a perfect example, because it was exactly following a model that has been a traditional model, and then suddenly it hit this very hot water. That, the term supercharged it.
Right.
And when it supercharges, it also changes its course. Right? So it think of your car, right? You're going around a curve and you hit your gas pedal. You'd better also be turning your right. wheel, or you're going to fly off in a completely different direction. So all of a sudden, you have a whole new prediction you have to make of where it's going to hit. So that's why they tend to make these very large predictions. And it's sort of saying, we think it will hit in the middle, but it could be anywhere in here. But now they're starting to have to use new math. We're exploring the future of this kind of computation. We're probably going to be using quantum computers to do this within a few years. I mean,
okay, so what?
We'll get better at it.
Okay, we'll get better at predicting.
We'll get better at predicting where we're going to have to spend a whole lot of money to recover from the storms that are getting worse because of climate change that we refuse to pay money to.
I was just going to say, will it stop the weather?
Of course not.
Yeah, so, you know, we can predict a little bit more accurately, and we can prepare as a result of those predictions, but the weather is the weather, and it keeps coming.
But the weather is being changed by the amount of carbon dioxide in the
absolutely
air,
right.
by all of the other things that contribute to global climate change, and that's, you know, when one place gets worse, another place gets better, and vice versa, and, you know, our hurricanes can get worse at the same time. Typhoons are less, giving less rain to places that need them, or something like that. It's just really, really hard to predict this stuff.
Your hurricane may vary. When you look at the spaghetti models, and if you don't know what we're talking about, if you just look up spaghetti model, you can see Google that. You can see where they are. But I mean, that's really what it looks like. It's just these lines that come out from one place. But there was one point right before the storm hit landfall that basically there were lines as far south as Alabama. West as Alabama, and as far east as Miami and the aforementioned South Beach. So the fact that but most of the lines were going straight and where the storm hit. So I understand all of that. I guess what I'm interested in the 2 minutes we have left is the one thing that you said is that it's the water temperature then that is the thing that sort of muddies the water as to where it's going to go and supercharge it. But is there a mathematical calculation that could come and say if the temperature is this, then this will happen. If the temperature is that, happen.
As wonderful it would be if that was the case, Joe. The answer is no, because remember, it's also so. In this case, it was the water temperature. But for example, when it hit land, it dropped a lot of its power because of the heat of the land. So that's land temperature. There's also wind speed, which is not just the wind speed of the hurricane where it is. So, you know, one of my favorite examples is when Sandy came roaring up straight at us here in Albany, all of a sudden it split around Albany, and we were not hit very hard at all compared to anywhere. Why? Because of a slight shift in one of the global air currents, right? And what caused that shift? No one knows. So we were very lucky, but, you know, you can predict it because it was something caused by something happening in the upper atmosphere. So the problem is there's literally hundreds of these factors. And so you can say if you change this one, this would happen. And that's actually what why those models look the way they are. They say most of the indicators look like it's going here, but if this changes, it could go here. If this changes, it could here. And usually it's not just one thing. It's if these 14 things change this way, right? And that's what modern data science looks like, and that's why we are creating these institutes to study the future of computing and the data AI and computation that we need to get better at this stuff.
Well, you're here to answer these questions. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have much more to discuss. More topics. We will get to those in just a moment. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and don't forget the lockbox, WAMC.org, WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday morning. Again, a reminder about the lockbox. It's open now. Before you could certainly give money. We weren't gonna not take it. But it's officially open, and that means that when the fund drive officially starts, where Alan and I go back and forth during this time of the day, that'll start October 17th. But before then, if we can make as much money as possible, then that's less time that we have to kind of take over the airwaves. 1-800-323-9262 is the phone number. However, the best way to do it is WAMC.org.
Joe, it is crucial. I hope everybody understands what the word crucial means. We just can't do this if everybody isn't doing a little something. And we know that you will. We have trust in you. We've seen you do it before. But now it's that moment when we really have to do it. And I get a little frightened when I look at Amber's face or the people who are, Dino, or the people who are answering the phones and get an idea that not everybody gets it yet. Now it's beginning to start humming. And so hum away and let's go.
WAMC.org, WAMC.org is how you do it, and we would love to hear from you on this Monday morning before it all gets underway. All right, couple more. Anything? I'm sorry, Alan. Was there anything more you wanted to say? Or are you good?
There is always something more I want to say.
Okay, all right.
But I can't remember what that might be.
Got it. All right. Let's go to other topics here, and we welcome your letters on those. There was an article that I was reading over the weekend in the Washington Post called "The Apocalyptic Democrats," and which just is a great band name. But I just think
sort of like Dead Presidents.
Yeah. The Apocalyptic Democrats. Yeah. And what they're saying is that the Democrats are embracing a darker message for the midterms. And this is, instead of one of hope and change, it's now like, oh, God, you know, this is what we're going to be going, words like fascism are being used, right-wing fascist powers, a coordinated domestic attempt to undermine our Constitution. So with this tough midterm election about 6 weeks away, many Democrats have largely settled on a campaign message, and it's not one that simply emphasizes their accomplishments. Instead, it amounts to a stark warning. If Republicans take power, they will establish a dystopia that cripples democracy and eviscerates abortion rights and other freedoms that we have.
Well, how do we know this? We know it because they've been doing it all along. I mean, they've got the Supreme Court right now, and they're using it to carry that very message you just spoke of, Joe. So we know that that's an accurate portrayal.
Libby?
I have to say I'm sort of relieved and happy that the Democrats are going to take their gloves off. I think it's the only thing we have to do right now. I think, yes, you know, we need to tout all of our accomplishments, but, you know, it's not 2008, right, where after 8 years of George Bush, the notion of hope and change played well with the electorate from Obama. Now we have to protect our rights, and I think it's clear that the Democrats have to portray the Republicans for what they are. This is not George Bush's party anymore. This isn't even Dick Cheney's party anymore. This is a party of pseudo-fascists or real fascists, you know, and people who just want to take away our rights and do not believe in truth or facts. They just want to believe. This is the Kelly Conway alternative facts. This is what they believe to be true, regardless of the truth. And, you know, look, I'm in the spin business, so I know how to spin my stuff as well as anybody else, but I always try to stick to the truth. And the fact of the matter is here, these Republicans, the MAGA Republicans, want to take away a woman's right to choose. They want to say my marriage is not valid. They want to keep this country white. And it all comes down to race. It always has with these folks, and it always will. The laws around that we might talk about later about Texas and the internet, you know, Texas is saying, no, we want people to be able to put white supremacist messaging out there and to recruit for that. We want to recruit for a race war in this country, another civil war in this country. And you know what? They're going to lose. You know, they're going to lose economically. They're going to lose. What they don't seem to get is, I would more than be happy for them to secede from the country because they're a drain on our resources. We give more money in our federal tax dollars goes to poor white states than it comes to New York. So if they want to do this, go right ahead. You can leave me alone. But I think the Democrats are right in taking off the gloves and portraying the Republicans, today's Republican Party, for what it is, which is a group of white supremacists.
Now, there's a lot in what you just said, of course. Yeah, you there was a lot there.
Yeah.
But to Alan's point, I think, of, you know, we know this because they're doing it. But this idea of, so you run campaigns. So it's fair to say to a Republican candidate, let's say, do you believe that the election was
absolutely
legitimate?
Ask Lee Zeldin.
Yes. So, but here's my question, which this is the part that scares me, though. If they say, if they give a non-answer, or even they say that they believe that it wasn't, does that have an impact? Because it doesn't seem in some quarters, I mean, obviously in New York it's going to have more of an impact than other places, but is that a necessarily a losing message?
I think the question that needs to be answered is Elaine Stefanik.
Elise
Stefanik. Sorry, any Elaines out there, I really apologize. Elise Stefanik, if you lose to Matt Castelli, which seems to be a possibility.
It does?
It does, given some polling that he has released. Will you say, will you abide by the decision of the voters, or will you say, I don't believe in the results, and I'm going to stay in this position? So what about that, Elise? What about that for all the other Republicans running in hotly contested races? Is Lee Zeldin going to concede the race when he loses, right, because he's going to lose? Are any of the other Republicans going to concede? So, you know, that's the question, not necessarily whether or not they believe Biden's president, because you know what? He's been in the office for 2 years now, and it's a little lost cause. I mean, it's over. But what about the future? And the other question to ask those people about whether or not they believe Biden is president is, well, if Biden's presidential elections was bad, why aren't you questioning all the other people who got elected, including the Republicans.
Okay, but you're using common sense and logic.
I know it's hard,
which is supposed to be my job,
right? And I just don't know. But again, back to my question: but is that a winning strategy? I mean, does that work? Because people seem to say, "Well, okay, Trump did what he did, but I believe I would rather vote for him than one of those Democrats."
So. Well, look, but those people believe in their version of the truth. So you're not going to move that 30 to 35% of the electorate. You're just not. They are where they are, and that's it. It's about talking to the base and the undecideds about what democracy means and about, you know, what truth is, what facts are, and the fact that, you know, we need to believe in the integrity of our electoral process. We are not a banana republic. And that's what people are trying to make us out to be.
But we do elect Democratic presidents.
Yes, we do.
Sometimes.
But
we vote for more, whether they get more votes or not, you know what is part of this and shouldn't be lost is that although, you know, we all are starting to question polling all the time. I was really stunned at some of the recent polling of independents because you would assume Roe versus Wade would be their top issue. You would assume some of these other heavy issues, or you would assume inflation, things like that. But what actually is turning out to be the number one issue is threats to democracy on both the Democratic mm-hmm. side and increasingly on the independents. So I think
what you were just talking about, too.
Right, Roe exactly. Wade. That's true. But I think that this is, you know, even when that's listed specifically, this kind of, you know, keeping our democracy democratic seems to be a message that is being picked up, is being understood. And you know, I think that's obviously part of why the Democrats are playing on that negative rather than mm-hmm. the positive, because the positive wasn't winning. And as Libby says, it's time to get serious.
Well, and I think there's also the piece of now see the ways that judgeships and other places can be corrupted. If there's not good checks and balances in place. And so what used to be a loose conversation about racial inequality in the courts or before judges and things like that is now becoming far more clear. People can see it, right? You can start to see how maybe former President Trump or others, in lieu of our conversation about hypocrisy here, are continuing to get passes all the time when they're charged in crimes in the court system, but yet how everybody held their breath when we watched George Floyd get killed at the hands of police and we weren't sure what that judge was going to do. And in the other cases since then, right, with the Rittenhouse case and other things like that, the Ahmaud Arbery case, right, like how our courts and our judgeships have worked and are appointed by the president. So I think there's also this piece where people are saying, oh, wait, our democracy can be corrupted. There can be a problem with it. It is under threat for Democrats and independents when we're not paying attention to this other interpretation that can be based on lies.
Mm. I guess what worries me, Alan, is that we've sort of been, mm-hmm. we're so used to the lies that they don't seem to have as much, let's say, political impact than they used to.
Well, I think people are.
Please.
Yeah, go ahead, Alan. I'm sorry.
No. You go ahead.
No, I think people are sort of numb. You know, you get numb to it all after a while, and you.
You're thinking of making it more skeptical, though, right?
Well, I mean, the people on the left side of center are like, well, this is just what they do. They lie. Right. And then the 30% thinks the lies are truths. So.
But now you're seeing outcomes right now. You're seeing, you know, outcomes that if you're in the middle, you can't deny the outcomes. Right. It's like that expression of you want me to believe my lion eyes are right. Like, no, you can see it. It is starting to click in ways that we didn't have conversations before about this kind of inequality or about some people having more freedoms than other people, though we use colorblind language and gender equality language and all that sort of stuff. It's not in front of your face anymore, and you can see it being backed up by law.
Well, yeah, and I think that, you know, interestingly, one of the other stories that came out this weekend, right, you know, similar to Democrats doing this message, is Supreme Court term opens with a 6-3 court that's looking at, we're going to revisit,
affirmative action.
Affirmative action. We're going to
gay marriage.
Looking at gay marriage.
It ain't going to be pretty.
We're looking at the first case they're listening to today. It will be a Clean Water Act restriction on the EPA. So, you know, they've already done that for clean air last time. So it's pretty easy to guess how this one's going to go. And there are a bunch of racial cases. There's a bunch of gay cases. So I think we're going to see what was just said really play out, that people are going to start saying, hey, wait a minute, you know, this isn't just talking about it. And hopefully that will bring to the polls a lot of people who said, nobody cares about me, you know, and none of this affects me. And, you know, if the minority vote, the younger votes, people like that will really start voting, it would really make a difference. On the other hand, you know, I talk to my students and I'm still having trouble getting them to, you know, they're becoming excited about some of the social media issues I'm bringing up because they live there. But you talk about, you know,
the
stuff
women
going
students,
on in the bigger
but
world.
The, but you, which I know there aren't that many, but
actually,
the women students, women are registering to vote in massive numbers. And, you know, I think that the I keep saying this. I think the Republicans miscalculated this decision, the Dobbs decision, because they could have said to the Supreme Court, no, don't do this. Right? They could have. But they didn't. And
well,
so,
is that true?
Yeah, I think so. I think that there are ways of getting the message through to people like Alito and the rest of them. But be that as it may, they've miscalculated the impact on this, and there are more women registering to vote, and they're going to get out and vote on choice, period. Because, and it's Republican women. It's not just Democratic women and not just NOPs, you know, the no-party people. But Republican women are upset about this. Many, many Republican women are upset about this. We're hearing it at the doors in Saratoga County.
Yeah, and I think there's, you know, in my engagement with students, a lot of the young men, and I don't, you know, I don't ask what their political party is. You know, we just talk about the conversation. A lot of them, you know, have brought up things like, if that was my daughter, like they're not a parent yet, but if it was my daughter who was raped, would I want her to have to be forced to have her rapist baby? And to hear a 21-year-old male be thinking in that way is really powerful. Yep. And it says that some of that younger generation, not just women, but also men, are saying that's not okay, right? That's not how I want my family plan or my fatherhood or my, you know, the country to go when it comes to laws. And for them, it's about them being able to be protectors, right, for their family and to support if they have a daughter. So it's a hypothetical, but that they're thinking that way tells you some of them are uninterested in voting for this Republican agenda.
And what's going to happen is the horror stories are going to start coming out about what happens to these women. And not just the women seeking abortions, but the women who have to terminate a pregnancy for health reasons.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Those are the horror stories that are going to come out. And in Schenectady, with the Ellis-Trinity Health merger, right, St. Peter's-Ellis merger, they're not going to be able to have access to the full range of reproductive health care. And women who are in trouble in a pregnancy, they're going to have to get transferred over to Albany Med. They're going to have to go someplace else to save their lives. That's what's going to happen.
So, and I hate to put it this way, but for all of you that just brought up really good points, but for those young people, right now it's a hypothetical. Does it get them to the polls in 2022? Does it get them to the polls in 2024?
Yeah, now again, maybe because the RPI students tend to be a little less politically active than some others, but I would be surprised to see a big move by 2022. I think 2024 might be different. Mm-hmm. But what I will say is interesting is every year, you know, a message comes out that a certain day, it's usually September 17th, is Constitution Day.
Right.
And we are supposed to, in our classes, do something that has to do with that. Now, I've never had an opportunity to do that before because in computer science, most of what we do on the technical side isn't. This year, I'm teaching about data in society. So I actually looked at what are the things in the Constitution that impact social media laws, privacy laws, you know, who can use your information and why, mainly First Amendment and Fourth Amendment, but you could think. What fascinated me was how few of my students actually knew what was in the Fourth Amendment. What was it? First Amendment, they kind of knew, sort of, but they didn't realize what its restrictions were and things like that. And then the interplay between, so Libby has said this before, right, that one of the things that has been happening over the years, and the Republicans have campaigned on doing this, is getting rid of civics, saying every kid should know the Constitution by heart as long as they don't know what it means.
Right. It's like when, I mean, and no offense to football coaches, but when the football coach teaches civics, I mean, we need licensed social studies teachers to teach physics.
Oh, boy.
We need
Civics,
right. What did I say?
Physics.
No. Civics. Yeah. We need licensed.
I'm happy to teach physics.
Yeah. Social studies teachers to teach civics so that people understand how the electoral process works. I mean, I deal with adults who don't get it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It drives me crazy.
Understood. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will move on to other topics, and we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll also give you a moment to help with the lockbox, which is now open and
so
ready
important.
For you. Yes, it is
what's
important.
What's the number? What do you do?
Well, you go to your device, your device of your choice. It could be your phone. It could be your tablet. It could be your laptop. It could be your computer. And go to WAMC.org. And when you get to that web address, it'll be on the right-hand side. Usually, and it'll say donate now, and you can press it, and you're off to the races.
And remember, you're keeping this station alive. You alone are doing that when you make that move.
Terrific. And we need you. We always need you, and we thank you so much for everything that you can do. WAMC.org, WAMC.org. We'll continue. We'll have our last go-round with our terrific panel after this short break. News from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Jim Hendler, Jennifer Burns, and Libby Post. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We also welcome your love and help to our lockbox, which is open as of today. WAMC.org for that, WAMC.org. We've got about 15 minutes left with our group, so we want to get in as much as we can. Here's a tech story I found fascinating, and I, since we have our tech guy here, we'll go to this. Tech companies are gaming out responses to the Texas social media law. Experts say said the measure, which bars companies from moderating content, could prove challenging for platforms to deal with. At some point in the future, Texans who visit social media sites might be greeted with a pop-up screen saying something like, "The content you're about to see contains graphic violence, white supremacist imagery, and other objectionable material. If you don't want to be exposed, click here." The pop-up is among a slew of options the companies are weighing in response to a Texas social media law that was upheld by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit last month. Most of the options being floated would alter tech company services so dramatically that some experts have concluded they would be virtually impossible to execute, say lobbyists that work with the companies. What does that mean, Jim?
Okay, so, you know, I've said on the show a lot of times that there's this one section of one law that really impacts social media. So let me just tell you the two key parts of this, right? One is This is from something now called the Computer Decency Act, if anyone cares, 47 U.S.C. Section 230. The key thing is we all refer to it as 230. You'll hear sometimes a politician say 230. This is what he's talking about. So the first one says, no provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as the publisher or speaker of any information provided by another information content provider. Okay, what the heck does that mean? What that means is we're not responsible. If somebody put something on my website, you know, a white supremacist thing, you can't sue me because it's there. You can sue them. Okay. But then it has a second section. So the Texas law, in theory, doesn't disagree with that thing. That just says, okay, they're allowed, you know, they can't be sued for putting something up. The question is, can they be sued for taking something down? So the second section says, it's what's called the good faith clause. Any action voluntarily taken in good faith to restrict access to or availability of material that the provider or user considers to be obscene, lewd, lascivious, filthy, excessively violent, harassing, or otherwise objectionable, whether or not such material is constitutionally protected. So in other words, the internet companies in the early days to help them create, and this was mostly aimed at the days of blogging and things like that, were told, you know, you're allowed to say what your blog say. If you're allowed to say, hey, I'm not going to let that person say that crazy thing on my site, right? And then the courts have held that 230 allows but does not require hosts to establish standards of acceptable use without risking reliability. So the Texas law doesn't contradict the first one, seems to contradict the second one, but the appeals court in September did some sort of crazy way of interpreting it. And the third one is they just ignored precedent that said it. Now, some of these laws are out of date because they were made at a time when the internet was really trying to get lots and lots of things to happen. And now it's owned by a few big tech companies. But a lot of it is now that you have these international, let alone national companies. So now you come to a Facebook or a Twitter and you say, you have to have a different set of rules in Texas. By the way, California has a law they're putting out pretty soon. Newsom's supposed to sign it, which will contradict the Texas law. It'll say, you must tell us what you're moderating and why and how, and we expect you to be doing good faith moderation. So in other words, if you want to put up a video of someone getting beheaded in Iraq, in Texas, they're going to say, you can't not do that. And in California, they're going to say, you got to explain to us why you did that. So the tech companies are
this is just a quick question, but and maybe a stupid question, I don't know. But stupid question 1.0.
Yeah.
Do we consider this to be regulation?
So these are the laws of regulation of the internet, which basically more or less say it's not regulated. Now we have people who want to regulate it, but they want to regulate it in different ways. From the right, they want to regulate in a way that says, hey, we want to say stupid white supremacist stuff. We don't want you to block us. From the left, they're saying, hey, there's a lot of free speech issues here, but, you know, we've always had these rules about what the limits are.
So does that mean red state regulation, blue state regulation?
You know, it could be red state regulation, could be blue state regulation. It could be you have people who are anti-monopoly and people who think monopolistic law has been applied wrong. It's a really messy issue, let's just say that, because there's tremendous agreement that something needs to be fixed. But what there's almost no agreement on is exactly what's broken and how we're going to fix it.
So my last question before we throw it to everybody else here, but is this a... is this something that my understanding in reading the article was that companies are responding to this sort of before anything is really set in stone. They're getting ready for it, which I would think would be really hard because it could be different in 50 different states.
Yeah. Right. Well, so the assumption is this will eventually go to the Supreme Court. What will probably happen is you'll end up with two of these district courts, the appeals courts, making contradicting decisions, and that's when you're allowed to take something to the federal Supreme Court. On the other hand, the federal Supreme Court has been saying the federal government doesn't have as much right to So they could end up saying the FTC doesn't have a right to say anything about social media.
So what will they FCC. Say? They'll say anybody can do anything, right?
Right.
Joe, it plays, Alan, yeah. Plays off a lot of interesting things. So this Supreme Court has been, very much conservative in terms of saying, yeah, don't restrict any kind of speech and blah, blah, blah. But on the other hand, they've been very, very strict on corporate rights. So, the question is, are they going to take Facebook's side or are they going to take Texas's side? Because it's unclear which of those is, quote, the more conservative opinion, unquote. So, that's what I mean by this stuff, even within the same parts of the same political spectrum, there's not a lot of agreement.
So what do you expect to happen?
I expect that the Supreme Court will come out with, if it hits the Supreme Court, they will come out with some very narrow ruling that more or less lets the big companies do what they want. And then essentially they'll hand it back to the states just like they did with abortion. And then it'll be up to the companies to figure out how to deal with it.
Jennifer, you seem deep in thought.
Because I'm thinking about how this affects an average user, right? So if I'm here in New York and then I fly down to Texas for something and I'm in Texas, how is this going to change what I'm seeing, what's being hit to me, or will it not? Can that be controlled by near in a different state if they're saying they can just make certain things illegal in certain states too?
That's what's being discussed. Let's take a simpler example, maybe, right? California makes rules about the emissions from their vehicles, right? The Trump administration tried to say California can't do that because it's a federal rather than a state issue, right? I believe they eventually lost. Right. And the states are now allowed to have their own rules on some of that. Right. So this is that same kind of thing. It depends. So with abortion, they didn't say you can't have abortion. What they said is it's not a federal right to abortion. So we're kicking it back to the states. Right. With the social media stuff, we don't know whether they're going to say it's a national issue because of the Computer Decency Act, or whether they're going to say it's a state's issue because the federal government really shouldn't have been allowed to regulate that. And frankly, Alan, if you asked me, I'd flip a coin.
It's just chaos. Yeah. It really is. It's just putting us
And whatever they do, these companies, first of all, have more money than the government. Second of all, have the ability to change on a dime and speed up, slow down. There's privacy laws doing. So, for example, right now there's different laws in Europe than in the U.S., and these companies have just found ways to deal with it. What they're really worried about is this Texas law explicitly violates current rights they have by a federal law. And so that's, most of these companies would like there to be some clear regulation. The Texas regulation is so bizarre.
Yeah.
On the other hand, so is the one they're currently operating under. Let me be clear, because Fran Berman, who also could have given the same thing, Fran used to teach a in complete college course on this. When Fran moved to another university, I now teach that course. So let us say I'm trying to tell you in 5 minutes what I'm trying to tell my students over 16 weeks of 2-hour lectures. I mean, this stuff is
and the pay
really,
is not as good. Yeah.
The pay is not as good.
Well, so I guess my question here is then, and I know we have to wrap up, but so this applies then to where the company's headquarters are, right? How does this, like, where, how, I can't even find the words. How do you determine who it applies to and who it doesn't then if you're in Texas?
So in theory, when you sign up for, well, first of all, your phone always knows where you are. So if
right.
you're using mobile, but let's not go there. If you sign up for, let's say, Facebook in Texas,
mm-hmm.
right? Facebook could say, okay, here's our Texas rules. Okay, Texas's law happens to say, by the way, you're not allowed to do that. So that adds right. some more complexity to this whole thing. But theoretically, they could say, so if you tell us that you live in Texas, you're not allowed to use Facebook. Okay, that would obviously upset or Twitter or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That would obviously piss off a lot of people in those states. What would they do? Well, they would probably sue for the right or something. Okay, but do they have that right? Well, it's not a right. It's not like, you know, it's not clear. It's not. There's nothing in the Constitution that says here's your social media rights. And so it really is something where we're using a law that was, we're using amendments that were passed in 1791 to figure out what to do about rapidly changing technologies in 2022. And by the time we make the next law, the companies will already be beyond it. And mm-hmm. that's part of what worries them is, you know, how much money are they going to have to put aside for fighting lawsuits that make no sense? That's really the question for them.
Well, those are big questions and certainly big questions to leave our audience with this morning. We're out of time.
Okay, fine.
Okay.
Don't forget the lockbox.
Don't forget the lockbox, WAMC.org, WAMC.org. We need you. And please, you know, what does it take? 45 seconds, if
you
that.
Know, no money, no station.
Simple as that. WAMC.org. Alan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jim, Jennifer, Libby, thank you. We'll be back right after this.